Hello, folks. Welcome back. It's Tuesday again, and this is Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated exclusively to Ring of Honor. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I'm joined this week, as always.
Hello.
By Emily Fia.
Hi, Harley. Hi, everyone.
This is, this is the 26th episode of Talking Honor. It's July 17th, if you listen to this when it was posted. And this was a fun week of television. I loved this week's television. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I admit, this weekend has been kind of crazy with wrestling. It's been kind of nonstop watching wrestling. So yesterday between the G1 and, or on Sunday when the episode of Ring of Honor aired in my region, between the G1, Climax Night 2, finishing Dojo Pro, and watching the latest ROH episode, I think I watched a combined around like six and a half hours of wrestling, which, you know, for those of you who regularly indulge in WWE, maybe that's not like a big deal, but in one day, watching that much wrestling for me is a little mind-boggling, in addition to all the rest of it that I've been watching this weekend. So, exciting, but this episode required a lot for it to stand out because of how much wrestling I was watching, and it did that very well, so I was very pleased.
Yeah, and it was refreshing because we've been maybe a little negative the past couple weeks or the past month about certain things in ROH. You can go back and listen to those episodes to find out what. But so, yeah, it was refreshing. I came out of this hour just loving pretty much every minute of it.
Yeah, I was really energized by it. I think that's one of the key things that has been lacking in some of the episodes that has kind of left us feeling kind of cold about it was a lack of energy. And this episode had it in spades, even with the Women of Honor solo match at the beginning and then the gauntlet just running so rapidly, so quickly. I was really pleased with just by how much energy this episode had, and it being the last of the four episodes filmed at the Hammerstein really paid off because I feel like that crowd just bounced right back into this. I assume this was the last of the four episodes they filmed because that's typically how they film them in the order that they're going to show them. So the crowd seemed to bounce back like crazy for this, and the energy that the crowd was giving really infused in what the matches were giving. And yeah, overall, just really stellar episode, really nice way to like come back from the kind of pseudo lull that we've had since Best in the World or right before Best in the World. It's a nice way to kind of get back on track.
Yeah, but one thing, the crowd was terrific for this episode as well. Like at the beginning of the episode, before anything's even happened, I mean, stuff's happened for them, obviously, because it's multiple episodes taped at once. But we just see Ian and Colt at the commentary table, and the crowd is deafening with their ROH chants, and they're just so energized, so into it all night. I just, I compare it to, you don't watch WWE, but anybody who watched Extreme Rules on Sunday, watch this week's ROH, and compare the crowds, and what a difference.
Well, I mean, to be fair, that was my hometown, I believe, in that Extreme Rules pay-per-view. So I have heard mixed things about that crowd. I assure you that when, and as those of you who are watching the ROH episodes filmed in Pittsburgh can attest, I believe our crowd was quite good for the ROH episodes that were filmed in my town. So please don't hold Sunday night's Extreme Rules crowd against my town. We are good about wrestling, I swear.
You're one of those classic wrestling towns over there in the United States.
Sure.
That's what I hear.
We have a good regional basis in wrestling. This whole region does. The Rust Belt region has a pretty darn good wrestling heritage, and like just the Mid-Atlantic in general, we're a good region for it. So, but. Yeah, I don't know the specifics about the Sunday crowd at Extreme Rules, but the little bit of chatter that I've heard was not positive. So you'll have to fill me in off air.
All right. In the meantime, before we dive into this week's episode of Ring of Honor Television, some other stuff's happening in the world of wrestling. We had somebody contacted us last week on Twitter and asked, hey, are you going to be discussing Dojo Pro? And we talked about Dojo Pro a little bit on the show last week. Weren't sure whether or not we'd get a chance to watch this 12-episode sort of mini-series, whether or not we'd be able to discuss it. although it's relevant because it's tied into Ring of Honor. The winner of Dojo Pro earned an ROH television title shot, and Todd Sinclair, ROH senior official, was the referee of that final match. So, happy to report, Emily and I both have watched Dojo Pro in its entirety. And I did some written reports for The Torch. So if you're reading the Pro Wrestling Torch, you can go online right now and read my written reports on all 12 episodes. But sometime, probably this very week, we'll be doing a bonus episode of Talking Honor, looking at Dojo Pro in itself. Just a standalone episode of the two of us discussing Dojo Pro in its entirety. So if you've watched it, if you have any thoughts or any feelings or questions about the series, send them to talkinghonor@gmail.com and we'll definitely try to work them into that show.
Yes, I'm actually really excited to talk about this. There's a lot to talk about here. I think you, Harley, had said that, you know, creating a new wrestling entity is always an interesting exercise. And there's a lot of things that Dojo Pro does well, and a lot of things that it kind of missteps on. And I think it's going to be a really interesting thing to talk about, an experiment to talk about. But I'm really dying to know. So if anyone out there has watched this, please write to Talking Honor and let me know specifically what you think of the belts themselves. There are two belts in Dojo Pro, the white belt and the black belt. And I want to know what everyone thinks, because this is a new show. There isn't a lot of chatter about it. I know there's some of you who listen out there who kind of look at the gear that's involved in wrestling. So I'm dying to know your thoughts on the belt situation for Dojo Pro.
And I definitely, if you've watched the whole series, very interested to hear other people's thoughts on who won and what that means for the ROH television title and maybe that person's presence in ROH going forward. Because that was sort of one of the big question marks coming out of the end of it too.
Yeah, and there's that ties in to, there was some news today related to stuff in Dojo Pro, and I don't want to give away spoilers for anyone, especially since we're going to talk about this, you know, with spoilers when we do our special episode. But I'm really curious about the news that I read today, how that fits in to what we see in Dojo Pro and what we see go down there, because it's just interesting, and it's related to the number one seed in Dojo Pro. So yeah, that's going to be interesting to see unfold in ROH.
Aside from Dojo Pro, still more stuff happening in the world of wrestling. New Japan is doing this little tournament thing. Not a big deal. It's this small little tournament with a couple of guys.
Yeah, you know, just 19 match, like 19 cards.
Just the top biggest names in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
I don't want to take this from the Tights and Fights podcast, but the Tights and Fights podcast often refer to WrestleMania, I believe it's specifically for WrestleMania, as Ice Cream Christmas. Well, if Ice Cream Christmas exists, for me, it's New Japan Pro Wrestling's G1 Climax Tournament. This is the very best wrestling you will see. You have, if you need to have an ROH connection to get into this, you've got two. In A Block, Hangman Adam Page is making his G1 Climax debut this year. And of course, in B Block, we have Kenny Omega. And so far, we are through night three. Night three happened, it'll have happened on Monday, June 16th. So if you're listening to this, just a day ago. And two nights in Tokyo and then a night in Hokkaido, where we got to see both Paige and Omega end their rounds with 2 points. Paige got a win over Bad Luck Fale, but in a very interesting way. So a way that doesn't actually happen very often in the G1, which was by disqualification. These matches are 30-minute time limits with rules intact. So disqualifications happen on a very rare occasion, but they are rare. So with Bad Luck Fale, he was DQ'd because of interference because of the ongoing Bullet Club Civil War drama. So in the midst of the match, as Hangman gets the upper hand on Fale, it's looking like it's going to be Hangman's match. And then, of course, the Tongans come out and interfere, and resulting in a disqualification for Fale and 2 points for Hangman. On the third night, another round of A Block matches resulted in a loss to Michael Elgin, who have seen in ROH before. And if you follow Being the Elite, there's a lot of Elgin in the first, you know, many episodes. The second night in Tokyo featured solo matches between B-Block competitors, including an amazing match between Kota Ibushi and Zack Sabre Jr., which honestly, as much as I'm going to gush about Kenny's match, you should definitely find the Ibushi Sabre match. I highly recommend it. It's just a glorious match of technical submission style with Kota Ibushi's just kind of rapid fire chaotic moves and energy. But then to close out that card, we had Kenny Omega taking on Tetsuya Naito and leaving that with a win. So both Page and Omega are currently at 2 points. There is another night. The next night is going to be in Corrigan Hall on Thursday. So, yeah, lots to talk about there. Honestly, I'm sure the PW Torch Lion cast is covering it better than we could ever give time over to. So make sure you're checking them out because they have had a lot of great things to say, including stuff to talk about that are non-ROH specific and the rise of Jay White in all of this, what's happening to former champion Okada during this tournament. Just lots of really good stuff here. Again, it's like the New Japan variation of Ice Cream Christmas. It's great matches every night. Each card is opened with a series of tag matches that set up dynamics for the following night between competitors and the blocks. So it's a lot of fun. You get to see matchups that you haven't gotten to see before. You get to see them in an environment that maybe you haven't gotten to see them before because the G1 just is this really crazy, chaotic time where they're having matches every other night. So by the end of it, by night, 19, you're going to see guys like glued together, taped together, barely hanging on. Yeah, it's the G1 climax time. It is a time to be alive.
And the winner gets a shot against Team France, right? For the G1 Cup.
The winner gets the shot at the ROH World TV title. No.
Whoever wins the G1 teams up with the Dojo Pro Black Belt to take on representatives from Team France in a qualifier for the Olympics.
The winner actually gets a trophy, a very an interesting looking trophy described by Kenny Omega as I can't remember if it was butt ugly or butt ass ugly, but it's an ugly trophy. It looks kind of like a giant flattened centipede that's absorbing a man. And they get that trophy. And then, of course, they have challenge rights to the IWGP heavyweight champion at Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome in January. So that's like the big prize is they get the challenge rights.
And then whoever comes out of that show, Wrestle Kingdom in January, might be involved in another big show happening, April, is it?
Yes. Yeah, yes, speaking of WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, breaking news this week. Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling present G1 Supercard, Madison Square Garden, one of the most famous sports venues in the world, the night before WrestleMania weekend. And so this is usually, this isn't new. ROH usually does a show the night before WrestleMania, usually at Supercard of Honor. This one is being branded G1 Supercard. So I'm guessing similar idea, but with even more ramped up involvement from New Japan. And, they've announced a couple of people already, haven't they?
Yes, I believe Naito is involved, and Okada, and maybe Tanahashi.
Yeah, so that's like the three top guys. Yeah, aside from Kenny Omega, whom we can probably assume is going to be involved as well.
I would be shocked if, as long as he's still in both of those companies, as long as he's still in Japan.
As long as he's not down in Florida.
We already have three of New Japan's branding stars. We're missing, they're going to add names in for the next several months. We're going to be seeing this card actually fill out. But I'm very curious to see who gets added from the New Japan roster. That's not the gaijin that we're used to seeing in ROH as well. So my fingers are crossed for Minoru Suzuki. I would love, love, love to see him in this card. He came and he did some matches this past WrestleMania weekend. He was he did the main event against Matt Riddle at Matt Riddle's Bloodsport. He definitely has, makes his way over here on a regular. So I'd love to see him on that card because I don't know about you, Harley, but Madison Square Garden is not an impossible trip for me to make. And I am very tempted to to forgo other travel plans to put all my money in on this one.
Oh, you're already all in. What more do you need?
I need ROH in New Japan at Madison Square Garden. That's what I need.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Salamonster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Salamonster sounds off. Since 2007, The Salamonster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
I'll be very curious to know, to see if it's kind of like ROH versus New Japan matches, or if, you know, we get ROH guys against each other in a match, followed by two New Japan guys against each other in a match. How they kind of
sort
through this lineup.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how they work that. I would really love to see a blend and not necessarily just one or the other. I wouldn't mind seeing ROH guys team up with New Japan guys in, like, you know, tag matches. That would be kind of interesting, because one of my issues with War of the Worlds is it tends to be so, you know, ROH versus whoever's visiting from New Japan. And that's fun to an extent, but, you know, it really ends up being this thing where, like, you can kind of start predicting the results of things, and Supercard usually has some titles on the line. It would be fun to see some blended stuff. I want them to use this as a opportunity for them to try matchups and partnerships in a way that they haven't necessarily already done.
Storyline's obviously going to change a lot in the next 9 months, but yeah, something like, for instance, maybe the Golden Elite against the Briscoes and the Girls of Destiny.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, if you're having something like that, you get to work everybody against each other in a way that's not just like us versus them. It's, you know, multiple parties and multiple interest points. And yeah, you're right. Like, the storylines are going to evolve a lot in 9 months. I mean, look at where we are compared to, you know, April. Look at where we are compared to, you know, the last Supercard. But that's going to offer just the amount of people that they have on both rosters offers them so much in variety. And no matter where they are in the storyline, it'd be really great for them to be able to use that effectively.
Yeah, it's gonna be a hell of a show. We know nothing about it other than the venue, the day, and three wrestlers, and we can already go on the record as saying this is gonna be a hell of a show.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I was ready for All In the minute that they announced Okada, and this is, you know, 8,000 some more people in an area that's actually kind of technically closer to us, and just raises the profile of both of these companies in an absurd, exaggerated way. I mean, Madison Square Garden, that's, you know, they are taking the, like, sandwich out of McMahon's hand.
Sure. I don't quite follow that metaphor, but sure.
Like, this is like eating his lunch. Like, this is Madison Square Garden. Like, there wasn't any kind of guarantee that ROH could ever secure this venue. But between ROH and New Japan, because ROH had the Madison Square Garden booked tentatively, or they had it booked, so it seemed, and then it fell through. And then all of a sudden, here's this deal. It actually comes together and it holds together. And I think it shows a lot about the growing power of New Japan as a brand with Western audiences.
And ROH set new records this year for attendance with Supercard of Honor. So why not double down going into next year's Supercard even more?
Sure. They've already seen what a independent production that is being produced by guys who are affiliated with ROH, who are, like, you know, contractually involved with ROH, has done. So what could they do with a little bit more of that Sinclair money and that New Japan heft behind it as well? They can book Madison Square Garden.
Oh, and that's, hey, all we're trying to track some All-In news on this podcast as well, because it's, again, it's related to Ring of Honor, and that's our goal here. And we had some All-In news this week. The broadcast team.
That's right.
We know Ring of Honor's own Bobby Cruz and former WWE ring announcer Justin Roberts are going to be handling the ring announcing duties. Alicia Ataut, who has just recently joined Impact Wrestling, most likely going to be in like a backstage interviewer capacity, it seems like. And then who's our commentary team? We got Don Callis from New Japan. We got Excalibur. Is he from PWG?
Yes.
Okay. We got Sean Mooney, like WWF legend. He was, I think he was before our time even, or like we were very young when he was around.
Yeah. WWF. I was going to say, that was the one name that like, that I recognized, but didn't have an immediate knowledge of.
Yeah. But that's a cool get. In the same way that they have Earl Hebner as one of the referees. That's just a cool like throwback.
Yeah.
Having him involved. And then there's somebody else I'm forgetting.
Yeah.
That guy, Cabana's,
you know,
friend.
Yeah, he wears the suit and Cabana wears the polo. He's the suit guy.
Rick A. Bonnie.
Ah, yes.
Billy Joel fan.
Our friend from Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Yes, Ian Riccoboni is also part of the team, which we're so thrilled about for him because we both love Ian and think he's great at his job.
Yeah, kind of a big fan of Ian, and I'm not doing the StarCast thing and I haven't made any arrangements to try and like do any meet and greets or like try and meet any guys, but like Ian, if like I can shake your hand and tell you what a good job you're doing in person, I would like to do that. So just putting that out there, I will be it all in. Hope I get to like run into you randomly. I'm sure you'll be very busy, but we're really, really excited for you. This is awesome. And we're so psyched that you'll be a part of the commentary team.
We don't even know how I'm watching this show yet. Because they haven't announced that. They haven't said whether it's going to be on Fight TV or pay-per-view or Honor Club or somewhere else. So,
well,
I don't know. But so, presumably, I'll be able to watch it somehow.
Well, StarCast is going to be available. Like, viewing is available through StarCast. Or StarCast viewing, like, I don't know what they exactly mean. Like, maybe it's sessions. Maybe it's, like, various things that they're doing throughout the weekend at StarCast. That's going to be available via Fight TV. So I'm wondering if the same is going to be true of All In, the show itself. Because that seems kind of
like Fight TV seems like the – that'd be my best guess at this point.
Yeah. They already have a model in place. They already have, like, obviously it's these guys coordinating and not like, you know, the people through Sinclair or whatever with ROH. But, you know, it makes a lot of sense since the infrastructure is kind of already there.
Yeah. One way or another, I'm watching this show. I'll be damned if I don't get to watch All In.
You will be all in. Even if you are not there.
Even if I'm all out. So I think that's it on our miscellaneous news segment this week. Now that we're 25 minutes into the show. But hey, there was some new Ring of Honor television as well this week. We had our 1 hour weekly show as we do every weekend. Like we said, I thought it was a terrific show. I was hooked from the beginning. I loved it. We opened with a Women of Honor match, Kelly Klein versus Jenny Rose. And I didn't know about this match going into this episode. Like, I had no idea what was happening until Jenny Rose's music hit. But in that 12 seconds or whatever between Jenny Rose being introduced and the match actually starting, my expectations got pretty high. Jenny Rose arguably had the best Women of Honor match this year against Sumi Sakai. That's kind of your feeling, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's exactly my feeling. Sorry, I was pausing because I wanted to look up her record so far this year. But yeah,
she's 0-2 in singles matches.
Hey.
This is only her second singles match.
Well, you know, and it's funny too, because Jenny Rose, like a couple other, you know, notable wrestlers in ROH in general, can often make me forget that they have a losing record. Because of how much I enjoy watching them wrestle. And in Jenny's case, it's been a matter of enjoying watching her just develop as a wrestler within the last 6 months. I mean, between now and when I saw her live back in early April when they were doing the Pittsburgh tapings, it's, you know, even just a huge difference between then and now. And her match against Sumi was definitely the Women of Honor match of the year so far. And that's no disservice to the matches that happened in the Women of Honor tournament, which I kind of hold a little apart. And it's no disservice to the, you know, the Supercard of Honor match between Sumi and Kelly Klein. Although I really think that Jenny's match against Sumi was the best that they've produced. And it was, you know, a TV match, of course, but it was just, it was like riveting all the way through and showed a enormous amount of growth in Jenny as a wrestler, even just between, you know, the beginning of the year and now. So this one against Kelly Klein, I was excited to see more than I even thought I would be, considering the fact that we keep seeing Kelly and we keep seeing Jenny, and we've been kind of complaining that we've been seeing the same like four women in Women of Honor, despite the fact that there's, you know, more women who work with this company than just the four that we keep seeing in various tag iterations. But that being said, like, basically from the get-go, I really enjoyed how this felt like a real fight.
Yeah, it was really fast-paced right out of the gate. I don't know if I wanted to credit that to Jenny. I don't know if that's fair, but maybe just because I remember her match with Sumi being similar idea, like really, really quick, really just no slow start to this sort of thing. And Kelly can sometimes wrestle a bit of a more methodical style.
Yeah. Yeah, Kelly can take her time on things. Kelly can be a little like slow to start and slow to transition. And Jenny is much more of the like kind of Joshi speed or getting there, which, you know, shows an influence both in working with Sumi, but also in the time that she spent at Stardom and other promotions. So I would credit the speed in this match to Jenny Rose, and credit to Kelly for like kind of meeting that and sustaining that speed, because that doesn't seem like a natural fit for Kelly.
I am a new Stardom subscriber solely due to ROH. I bought my Stardom subscription and I'm so excited. I've only watched one show so far, which was their very first show of 2018. But even in that one show, I noticed the big thing for them: nonstop speed, lots of drop kicks, lots of things like that, which you don't see too much, not just in Women of Honor, but I don't see too much in NXT or on Raw or SmackDown or even in Lucha Underground. Like, yeah, those Stardom women are just, they're tough.
Yeah.
They're little rockets, each one of them.
Yeah. Joshi, Japanese women's wrestling has come a long way, but I mean, the peak is often considered All Japan Pro Wrestling's women's division in the late 80s and 90s. And when you watch those matches, the work rate, it gets overused to even talk about it, but the work rate is insane. Like, the work rate is just out of this world. Like, they go and they go and they go, and their matches last for 30 some minutes. They last for 40 some minutes. I watched a Stardom tag match that I think was about 42 minutes long. And I don't know that there was a single moment where there wasn't something happening. There, you know, there was not even like something like a rest hold or anything like that, but like actually something happening. When you break it down like minute by minute about what's happening in those matches, you see a ton of things happen within each 60 seconds. So it doesn't surprise me that even just spending a little bit of time over there would have a great impact on a wrestler like Jenny Rose, who's like fairly early in her career and is, you know, looking to improve, is going to vastly improve with every kind of excursion that she takes.
Yeah, and if you're an ROH viewer and want more Stardom in your diet, I believe we're going to be seeing Sumi defending her title against Hazuki in the next couple of weeks on television.
Yeah.
I seem to remember that being announced before they did the tapings.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. And we got to see Hazuki at Best in the World. So this is it's nice to bring her back. And Hazuki is a member of Ota Tai, and there's a lot of really interesting storylines happening with them right now in Stardom. And so it's just good to see Hazuki getting more time over at ROH, because her debut, I think, was at Best in the World. So this is
she was part of the Women of Honor Championship Tournament.
Yeah. Oh, she was. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I believe she was eliminated from that tournament by Sumi.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought that her first appearance at ROH was the Best in the World show, but I probably just...
I remember her being in the tournament along with, I think, Hannah Kimura and Kajetsu.
And Mayu? Kajetsu.
Yeah, and Maya. Mayu.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe you have to go back and revisit that tournament there.
You're going to have to go back and watch more of those tournament matches, or at least revisit them, because it feels like a distant memory at this point.
Yeah, you have to track down the VHS tape. I think you can get the box.
Yeah. Or, you know, I'll just go and, like, you know, find the tape trading on Reddit.
Yeah. Look for the ad in the back of the fanzines.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So that was our first match.
Yeah.
And then we had our second match.
Oh, wait, before we move on from this, I don't know the last time we've seen a Women of Honor match that featured a referee stoppage win, but this is what we got here with Jenny passing out because of the guillotine choke from Kelly. And that, I appreciate that because I don't think we get to see it that often in a referee stoppage win.
Yeah, that's something I'd have to look into. I feel like we might have seen that with Kelly in the spring.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell you against whom or what the circumstances were.
Yeah, it wouldn't be surprise me at all if the last time we saw it was with Kelly, or if Kelly's the one that typically delivers that type of thing, because, you know, that's her style. But yeah, it's always something interesting to me when a Women of Honor match, you know, features a referee stoppage like that, because just it's not a very common thing. And I think it's a good way to show both like Jenny's resilience, but also, you know, Kelly's just like brute strength. But yeah, it's just something I noted.
So our second match on the show was a five-team... I don't even know how to phrase this. Five teams competed in a gauntlet match to crown new number one contenders to the Kingdom's ROH World Six-Man Tag Team Championship. And, I watched this week's ROH television from 6 to 7 p.m. on Sunday. That's when it aired for the first time on Fox 29 in my area. And my buddy was coming over to watch Extreme Rules. So he came in as this match was in progress and just looked at the screen and was like, what on earth is this? Why are there like 12 guys in the ring? What are you watching? I had to explain it's a gauntlet match and it's a thing. And we're halfway through at that point. And I think all I said to him is, yeah, it's been like nonstop. We had six guys fighting, three were eliminated, another three guys came out. They just kept going. Those three got eliminated. Another three guys came out. We just kept going. There's five guys over at the commentary table. It's just like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, this was basically right out of the gate. Just action, action, action. I really appreciated that there wasn't a slowdown here. They were able to build in the commercial breaks fairly thoughtfully, which I thought was a nice touch. And honestly, I think all of this was augmented by the fact that there were, you know, five guys in the commentary booth. And that added to the frenzied feel of this whole event. But again, we come back to the fact that crowd at Hammerstein was just all about this gauntlet, all about this particular episode. They were just really into it from the start of it. And that it just infused that extra energy that you want going into a event like this, so that, you know, a match between the Dogs and kind of an interesting slash kind of like haphazard three guy pairing of Gresham, LSG, and Alex Shelley will feel more events than it might maybe would if the crowd wasn't as into it, but the crowd was just buying it right away.
Yeah, so our first matchup, we'd been told in the previous 2 weeks that there'd probably be some new trios, some kind of mismatched teams, which makes sense because there aren't too many established trios or stables in ROH right now. And also, it's only logical that someone like Jonathan Gresham, someone like LSG, would jump at the opportunity to possibly earn a title shot, right? Why wouldn't you? All I have to do is find two guys to team with, and maybe I could be holding ROH gold a month or two from now. I'm on board with that, right? So it explained why we had these kind of mismatched teams, which I liked. And We got the part three to the misadventures of the Dogs in their search for money.
Yes. Yes.
And we did not see that ending coming. I didn't. First, they try giving Shane Taylor an IOU, and he says, nope, I need cash. Then they try robbing Ryan Nova, and it turns out Ryan Nova's only got $6. And then what do? You're in ROH, and you need money. Where do you go?
Well, it helps if you are eavesdropping on a guy who happens to be talking about how rich he is just at the very moment that you're listening.
Did we throw this out last week on the show? We kind of did. We were like, who in ROH is rich that they could go to for money? And we're like, I don't know, like Bullet Club, Young Bucks are the only guys with money. And we weren't far off.
Yeah, I'm actually a little disappointed that they weren't like getting money from the Young Bucks. But of course it's Cody.
Yeah, so Cody says, it's 2018, I don't carry cash on me, nobody carries cash. Secondly, I just self-financed a 10,000 seat venue, I got no money. But interestingly enough, once they mention Marty Scurll, all of a sudden Cody's got some money.
Yeah, they bring up Marty Scurll's, $1 million record contract, and then suddenly, you know, oh, there's an envelope of cash that you guys just can have.
Yeah, so I guess Cody's jealousy of Marty or Cody's issues with Marty maybe didn't end at Best in the World.
Yes, yeah. He's willing to pay off, out of jealousy alone, I suppose. Honestly, though, I mean, I got Cody's original point. It is 2018. Who carries vast amounts of cash on them? Why isn't Shane Taylor, like, adapting to new forms of payment and, setting up a...
He should be carrying around one of those little portable debit machines.
Or, like, Venmo, PayPal. Come on, Shane. Like, let's work a little bit in the current century that we're in. Like, it's okay to adapt with the times. It's only going to get you your money faster, honestly. I mean, for real. Just saying, if you're going to be like a hitman for hire, you might want to adapt and make your payment structure a little bit more flexible.
Well, and I don't know. You kind of feel bad for Shane. Like, after all that, or for the dogs, I guess. I don't know. After all that, they finally get the money. They hire Shane to be their partner. And they're eliminated the first team out of the gauntlet.
Yeah, I appreciate it. The commentators have a job to do. And I appreciated them saying that these matchups, the lineup, was randomly chosen, which explains why like your most jobby of like jobber team is number one in the lineup. I don't know, to me it was just funny to like for them to emphasize that this was a random lineup, and then of course our first guys are Shane Taylor and the dogs.
Yeah, but they could have done it, they could have been the fourth team, come out, fight for 5 minutes and then lose.
That's true
as well. There's different, yeah. So yeah, that was a fun little thing. They faced Shane Taylor and the Dogs, eliminated by the tag team of Alex Shelley, Jonathan Gresham, and LSG. The new Search and Destroy?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Seek and Disturb?
Yeah, keep searching and start destroying. Part two.
Forget and repair? I don't know. Yeah.
So the commentators made a good point. Alex Shelley's kind of fallen into this sort of mentor role where he's taken guys like Jonathan Gresham under his wing in the past and kind of helped mentor them, show them the ropes a bit. So here he had Gresham and LSG, two young guys on his team. I like that. We did get an official update on Coast to Coast. I've been saying for weeks, where are Coast to Coast? They were doing so great, and then they vanished from television. And unfortunately, it wasn't a booking decision. Shaheem Ali was in a bad car accident in mid-May, and he is still on the shelf, and it's not clear when he's going to be back in... But it's probably not going to be anytime soon either.
It's a shame for it to happen regardless, because, you don't want that to happen to a human being. But it is especially a shame for LSG and for Shaheem, with Coast to Coast having such like a great rise in the company in the last year. Like, this timing couldn't have been worse for them as, a tag team and their role in ROH and, the potential for their placement. But, I'm sure, he'll make a full recovery and we'll get to see them back together very soon. It's just, that's was unfortunate news to find out.
Yeah. And especially because he was, 100% free. we've seen in other companies in the past, oh, blah, blah, was in a car accident. And then it comes out that like 2 days later, oh, it's because he was drinking and driving. Like Ali was totally in the clear here. No responsibility, no fault for this. So that's just like, yeah, that's just a bad, bad break.
Yeah. And I mean, on a related note of just people who aren't present, I feel like such a dummy because I was saying like, oh, I really hope that it's going to be Jonathan Gresham and the Motor City Machine Guns are going to be in this gauntlet. But of course, during the taping of this, this would have been late May, I believe. I think this was like the tail end of the War of the Worlds tour that they did these tapings.
So this episode was taped on June 2nd.
Okay, June 2nd. Then, of course, Chris Sabin was still in Japan.
Ah, for Best of, I was wondering where he was.
Yeah, he was still in Japan for Best of Super Junior, so of course he wasn't going to be here. So I felt kind of dumb about that because I'm like, I'm the New Japan watcher in this duo, and I completely just got my timelines all kind of messed up. Kayfabe is great about that. So yes.
Well, ROH's taping schedule will do that to you sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know, what with like Best of the World happening too, it's like you get things that are happening in now, and then you have
So it was 44 days between this match being taped and us watching it. And I mean, like when Silas Young came out with the television title, I went, how old is this footage?
Oh yeah,
because Silas hasn't been TV champion for literally a month from yesterday is when he lost the title to Punishment Martinez. And when he saw the title here, I thought, wow, this was a while ago.
Yeah. I mean, it was June 2nd. Wow. 40 some day. Wow. But yes, so that explains Chris Sabin's absence, so now we know why both LSG and Alex Shelley were without their partners.
Yeah. And for a thrown together kind of trio teaming together for the first time, they did pretty good. They beat Shane Taylor and the Dogs. And then they beat Silas Young and the Bouncers.
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but is that the first time they've been called the Bouncers?
I think it's been referred to in a casual way, but like in a joking sense, but I don't know.
Not as like their official team name?
I don't think it's ever been referred to as an official team name, but correct us if we're wrong about this.
Because I recall when they first started teaming together, my former co-host on this podcast, Ms. Lola Bradbury, and I would routinely bring it up as they need a team name. They need like matching gear or something, and she actually tweeted at Brian Malonis and said, hey, when are you guys going to choose a team name? And he said, oh, we got some ideas in mind. And now here we are many months later, and they finally have one.
Yes.
So kudos to them. I hope Lola watched this week's show so that she knows that it finally happened.
Kudos to them, but I have to say they should have taken my partner's suggestion and gone with the Golden Livers instead.
I want to say we ran through a lot of alcohol related puns when we were pitching ideas for them.
I mean, Bouncers, it's fine. It's good that they have a name.
But yeah, it almost is too, I picture them like bouncing around because they're also like big guys.
Okay, so like, yeah, that's kind of my problem with it, is that
like they're kind of like what do you call those little balls with the handles that little kids bounce on?
Hippity hops.
Hippity hop. Yeah, that's what I'm picturing now. That's like, I'm picturing them as maybe that's some new merch. Maybe Beer City Bruiser and Brian Malonis themed branded hippity hops.
You know,
they're black and they've got like a little beer on it. And
you know, I know it's not WWE, but like, let's get adventurous with our merchandising. Let's, go for it.
Yeah, Bailey can have her little waving arm guys. They can target those kids with a beer themed tag team.
Yes.
what could go wrong?
Speaking of nicknames, I have to give more credit to Matt Taven. I feel like the last couple episodes I've been giving so much credit to Matt Taven. But I thought he was especially good on commentary at this with this particular matchup with Silas Young and the Bouncers against Shelley Gresham and LSG. I especially liked, I don't know why this made me laugh, but Mantis Malonis made me laugh. I guess maybe because he was like kind of adamant about this being the right nickname for Brian Malonis. And I don't know where he got it or why he came up with it. I've watched this episode twice now. I still don't know why it's the joke, but it made me laugh out loud, so more credit to Matt Taven.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Yeah, I will say Taven was really good on commentary. A lot of times somebody, wrestler joins commentary and he kind of distracts a bit from the match, or he kind of fades in the background. Taven struck the right balance where he was there, he wasn't taking away from the action, but he was telling all the stories too. He was quick to point out, like, oh, Silas Young, he's the reason we lost the six-man titles in the first place. Which was Silas filled in when TK Orion was injured, and that was the match that they lost the six-man titles. So he brought that up. When SoCal Uncensored came out, he said he'd love to face SoCal Uncensored again because they already beat them once, sort of thing. And I love that. That's so refreshing to me. And any other time, wrestlers on commentary and they ask, which of these two guys would you like to face? And he's like, well, I'll face either one. And they refuse to make a stand. I hate that so much. So Taven's saying, I want to face SCU. I already beat them.
Yeah.
Beautiful logic.
Yeah.
And just another like way to a humble brag.
Yeah. He was really good. Like his like little like snarky comments were well timed and he didn't overdo it. And even, you know, having his goons with him in the commentary booth didn't really overwhelm the commentary. It kind of just occasionally when there were like visual cutaways to Ian and Colt dealing with these like three guys. It was always amusing. It wasn't oversold. Yeah, I was pretty amused and pretty impressed by the fact that like Taven in character was as engaging in commentary as he was. And you know, of course, you got the requisite like Melvins and et cetera, but like well timed. I think timing in this was really important. And as we talk about how fast paced this episode was, how fast paced this gauntlet in specific was, timing in commentary becomes especially crucial. And so Taven dropping things in here had the possibility of stopping things in their tracks or kind of like grinding everything to a halt, at least as far as the energy goes, but it really didn't.
Yeah, so Shelley Gresham and LSG defeat Silas Young and the Bouncers as well. They hit kind of like a triple team on Malonis, with LSG finishing off with a 450. And that was one of the big stories of this match too, was LSG looked like a star in these first 2.5 matches in the gauntlet. He just had a ton of energy. He had a couple of big moments, flipping off the turnbuckle onto three guys on the floor.
Yes.
Pinning Malonis, which was kind of like a fun callback to the Coast to Coast Bouncers feud that we had earlier this year. So yeah, I loved how great LSG got to look, and I would be totally on board with him, Gresham, and Shelley maybe sticking together as a trio and maybe making a go of it in the trios division.
Yeah, I don't know if I see much future for it, but I wouldn't mind seeing it again. And if anything,
they're not doing a lot as singles acts, so.
Yeah. And I mean,
and why not do both, right? The New Japan stables do that a lot, don't they?
Well, they do a lot of tag matches in their cards, like in the low cards. They do a lot of like various tags. So yeah,
but they'll be you'll have like a stable, and they'll team together 1 week, and then the next week, one of them will wrestle as a singles wrestler. It's not one or the other. You can bounce both.
Yeah, I mean, they have guys who definitely do more tags than they ever do singles matches. I mean, you've got guys who mainly do singles, but in the big cards, they'll occasionally do a tag match. Like you've got like, you know, for example, like Naito and Kenny Omega, they do tag matches in the big cards as, you know, in the lower, like in the big events and the low cards, because that's kind of, you know, the role that they have to play at that particular moment. But then you have guys like Bushi is a really good example of someone who mainly does tags and occasionally gets to do solo wrestling, especially when it's a tournament like Best of Super Juniors. So yeah, it's kind of the glory of having a faction, kind of a built-in like stable system into New Japan, is that you do have these guys who are working together and training together in ways that make for really organic tag structure. So in a way that ROH doesn't necessarily have, because, you know, we don't know how we know that Alex Shelley has worked with Jonathan Gresham before, but we don't know exactly like how these three guys got trained together, or like how, you know, how they can come together and be an effective tag team. It's actually something that even like Taven talks about in his commentary about like the difference between being like a six-man tag like the Kingdom and working together and being together all the time versus three guys who are just working together for a specific event. So it's kind of the benefit of having a stable system in New Japan Pro Wrestling is that you do get the option for a six-man tag much more organically because you have these guys who've just, they have trained together. They are familiar with each other. They can work together as easily as they can work on their own.
Yeah, but you could keep these three together and explore that going forward, kind of delve deeper into what their histories are with each other, how they first met and how they, what they do outside of the ring, how they've grown together as teammates and things like that. There's so much different ways, different kinds of storytelling you can do in pro wrestling. I love pro wrestling.
Yeah, I do too. And that falls into...
Episodes like this remind me like, man, goddamn, I love wrestling.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, tell me about it. I just had like the most insane, like, you know, 48, 60 some hours where like so much of it has been dominated by like some of the best pro wrestling that you'll ever see. And also admittedly some of the most lackluster, but we'll talk about that on our special episode. But for me, the prospect of them getting to see more of this, you know, six man kind of thrown together six man team to get a sense of them as and like an evolving working relationship between the three men falls in the category for me as something I really want and something I fear that ROH just won't do. I think it's a lesson that they still haven't quite learned from their partnership with New Japan Pro Wrestling. ROH could stand to learn and incorporate a lot of the best stuff that New Japan does. But they tend to use their partnership more specifically as just like, you know, the things that partnerships usually give you in the most, you know, superficial ways, like getting to talent share and occasionally sharing cards and things like that. I would really love ROH to view their partnership with New Japan as also an opportunity to explore structures within their matches and within their setups in a way that could maybe benefit their talent and their storyline building in the long run. Because when they don't do that, we end up kind of being overwhelmed by the missed opportunities.
So you're saying it's the kind of partnership where they get together once a week and make out, but they never actually talk about like their hopes and dreams.
Yeah. You know, they like haven't taken their relationship to the next level. They're not like, they're not really looking at the long-term prospects. They're really in that like casual, like, oh, we're feeling it out phase, but they're not really talking about it the way that they feel.
Well, maybe Madison Square Garden will function as a promise ring. Of
cool. So gross.
So, moving on. Shelley Gresham and LSG, they beat two teams, but then they fell to SoCal Uncensored, which is going to happen. A gauntlet match like this, you got to be amazing to start at the beginning of the gauntlet and win the whole thing. And they went far, but they couldn't finish it off. SoCal Uncensored defeats the new Search and Destroy, knocks them out of contention, and SoCal Uncensored face off against the last team in the gauntlet. And it's another interesting one. We get Kenny King, Bachelor in Paradise himself. We get Chucky T, the best friend himself. And we get the future of honor, Eli Isom.
Yes.
How excited were you to see your little puppy?
I just so thrilled to see them let the puppy out into the world, out into the ring, let him like run around. And wow. So I was so excited to the point where it took me watching it the second time to like step back and be like, okay, but why?
What? Yes, but I love that.
I love it.
The commentators were all over it. Cabana and Taven were laughing when Isom came out. Like, really? I don't know about this. Like, guys never won a match on ROH television. He's, you know, he's a rookie. He's basically enhancement talent for the most part. And, like, you chose to team with him in this high-stakes match with, like, a championship opportunity on the line. Taven cracked that, you know, the reason that Kenny and Chucky are teamed with Eli... it's because they don't have any other friends. He was the only person they could find.
I mean, it's a credible explanation, I suppose. I mean, who higher on the roster would you swap in for Eli? Like who? Like there's guys, right? But I'm struggling to.
Brett is injured. Kenny King is kind of has a history with Caprice Coleman. I don't know if they're still friends or not. Yeah, who else are Kenny and Chucky friends with?
I mean, you could have brought in,
you know, guys like Lethal, but they're not in the six-man title world at this point.
I'm gonna guess that at this point they knew where they were going with Lethal's storyline, and that wasn't where they were gonna put him at all. And like obviously guys like Paige and Punishment, this isn't their field either, although it very well could have been. But still, it's like that's a really bold choice to make. And Colt Cabana, you know, protector of the young boys, as we've seen, even he was kind of scoffing about like, well, no, I have to agree with like Taven here. Like this is, you know, Eli's like essentially, you know, still training, still in, you know, development.
Yeah. Hey, what about Cheeseburger? He could have been the third man.
Okay, I kind of actually I wondered about that because when I was stepped back and thought, okay, why? The only other guy who came to mind that was a feasible stand-in was Cheeseburger. So unless he just wasn't booked for some reason, I don't know.
He was probably still smarting from the Bully Ray match. He got whooped pretty good there.
Yeah, definitely.
And anyway, it's a moot point because Kenny and Chucky were right. They chose Eli Isom, future of honor. Everybody scoffed. Everybody said this was a bad idea. What are these guys thinking? And Eli wins the entire match, the entire gauntlet for his team. Not only does the rookie, the future of honor competitor, win the match, he wins it by pinning the only Grand Slam champion in ROH history.
Yes. Yeah, he pinned Christopher Daniels.
Yeah, talk about a fallen angel.
This was both a like marvelous thing to see if you are like myself and you just think everything about Eli is adorable and so like, you know, just, you know, great, even though, you know, he's clearly green, but like also, man, if you are not a fan of SCU, if you're not a fan of Christopher Daniels, this was a fun one for you to watch as well. What does this say about like about SCU, about Daniels' storyline? Like, is this just further salt in the wound of their, you know, upcoming like contract being over?
It says that New York City is the worst town they have ever been in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Hammerstein Ballroom, that crowd was eating this up and they were like, they were psyched to see this match and to see like the crowd in this. And I keep coming back to this, but like the crowd really does make this match, and their reaction to Eli was the kind of enthusiastic like confusion that you would expect, that you feel, but you would like, you wouldn't really know how the crowd would react to Eli. But like, because the pace was so fast, and you know, we're just moving along and they're the last of the five gauntlet teams to take on this challenge. By the time Eli gets out there, it's like the crowd is just whipped up into a frenzy. They're just eating everything up. So they're ready to see something like this happen. They're clearly psyched to see Kenny King. They're clearly psyched to see Chucky T. And then Eli is this like weird, cool surprise.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
And they gave him the 1-2-3 kid, pinning Razor Ramon. That's what we got. The huge upset nobody saw coming. And yeah, I mean, Taven vowed that his Cinderella story is going to end the second they get their title shot. That'll be it for Eli. But I said last week or the week before that I genuinely felt whoever won the gauntlet would be our next six-man tag team champions. And I think I'm going to have to double down.
So you think, like, next time...
I think Eli Isom will be holding ROH gold this year.
Okay.
Crazy.
No, I can't...
But, I mean, the boys have held the six-man title, so not that crazy.
Yeah, I mean, not that crazy. Again, we've talked about this in the past, but the six-man title really does allow ROH to kind of do more adventurous stuff and experiment with combinations and, you know, let kind of Otter or their, like, low-card guys kind of hang on to a title for a little while. It really isn't, you know, wouldn't be completely unheard of to have someone like Eli, especially paired with guys like Kenny and Chucky T. Like, those guys, you know, they will get those type of titles off and on the regular. You know, Kenny King was just the World Television TV title holder. So, you know, there's some prestige there. So Eli holding that in tandem with those guys isn't totally crazy. Those belts are kind of made to swap around a bit. But man, if you had asked me last week, like, predict who that team is going to be, predict what that finish is going to be, I never in a million years would have called this one.
Hell, at this point, Ryan Nova might be a television champion by the end of the year.
Hopefully.
We can't predict anything anymore.
You know what? I hope he is, and I hope that ends up with him having more than $6 in his wallet.
Yeah, if anybody needs it, it's Ryan.
Yeah.
So what do we call Kenny King, Chucky T, and Eli Isom? What's we need team names now?
Well,
the Bouncers have been named. What are these guys?
Well, what do they have in common? Like, what's a common ground for them?
Kenny King doesn't really have a nickname, does he?
Huh. Yeah.
He's the Bachelor in Paradise. Chucky and Beretta are the best friends. Maybe these guys could be the good friends.
The
acquaintances.
Casual acquaintances.
Yeah, the bachelors. Are Chucky and Eli single?
I think that, well, I know that Kenny is, and I assume that Chuck Taylor is.
How dare you? That's so... I don't know if he should be insulted or not.
I mean, I'm reading a lot into his, like, you know, Twitter and to his just, like, his, you know, persona online, but I'm going to assume that there isn't, like, someone who exclusively shares partnership rights to Chuck Taylor.
You don't think there's a Mrs. T?
I know there's a Mrs. T, and she makes delicious pierogies. But as for Eli Isom, I don't know. He's just so cute. I don't know if he's even of dating age yet. Do they date that young? Do the kids date anymore? Okay. He's old enough to go on, like, group dates, right? Like, he can go with, like, a couple of friends and...
Yeah, they go to the mall to see the new Avengers movie.
Yeah. They, you know, they have, like...
And then mom picks
exactly.
up.
Precisely. So, you know, I mean, he's going on group dates. So I don't know if they've seen anyone exclusive yet.
Yeah, so I don't know. And we don't know when they're getting the title shot. Maybe Death Before... Anytime there's, like, a question mark of when is this going to happen, my brain is just going, oh, probably Death Before Dishonor in September.
Yeah, I mean, we have a couple of house shows before then, so it could theoretically happen there, but...
But I'd like to see this built up as an actual, like, big match.
Yeah.
I'd like to see these guys team together again and pick up a couple more wins going into that show to prove that this wasn't a fluke victory, to prove that they're a real team and they're a threat to the Kingdom.
That would be great. Let's see this happen. Let's put Eli out there more. Let's make Eli if we're gonna call this a Cinderella story of sorts, let's actually make it a Cinderella story and not just, like, a one-off type of, like, you know, thing before the inevitable fall. Like, let's see this.
Let's get him the horses and the gown and the whole
shebang. That's right. Like, we've kind of taken him to the ball already. Like, he's been he's made his crazy, like, sudden abrupt appearance at the ball as this, like, star. But let's backtrack a little bit and do a little bit more building there, because I think that will go a long way in making this even more compelling if in fact they decide to do this match at Death by Dishonor. Yeah, I'm seeing
Kenny and Chucky as, like, his fairy godmothers, where we get, like, a series of vignettes where they're, like, coaching him and training him to be, like, a legitimate ROH competitor.
I mean, this is a way to break through. And we've been talking about how we want to see them use their Future of Honor talent and, you know, bring up more guys. And Eli's been there for a while now. And, you know, essentially, I don't know if this is his time just yet, but like, why not? If they're doing this, this seems like a big step forward for Mr. Isom.
Yeah, he won a match. That's as big of a step forward as he can take.
He won this gauntlet, and he won it against Christopher. He pinned Christopher Daniels.
Grand Slam champion.
Yeah. Like Christopher Daniels, who, like, as we've talked about with your exploration of like the back catalog of ROH being released onto Honor Club, like Christopher Daniels has been in ROH since the beginning. Like, he's their one of their longest running stars, and Eli got a pin. Like, this puppy got a pin on
on a former world champion.
Yes. Yes.
Anything can happen in the world of wrestling.
Wrestling is great.
Yes. So this Friday, Nashville, Tennessee, it's Honor for All, our first Honor Club event in a little while. Big card, Nick Aldis versus Flip Gordon for the NWA title. Punishment Martinez and Scorpio Sky for the TV title. Sumi Sakai and Karen Q in a Proving Ground match. Briscoes, Young Bucks, and The Addiction in a triple threat non-title match. Marty Scurll versus Matt Taven. Cody versus TK Orion. Chucky T versus Bully Ray. And Kenny King versus Shane Taylor versus Chris Sabin versus Jonathan Gresham in a four-corner survival match. Big card.
Yeah.
Lots of potential show-stealing matches there. And some interesting, I don't know if any more matches will be added or not. I mean, we got I think that's 8 matches there.
I feel like that's a pretty great card.
That's pretty much full. But it's interesting that our world champion isn't on the card.
No, that is, yeah. Huh. That is odd. Yeah,
so I don't know. Maybe Jay shows up in some sort of other capacity, like in an in-ring segment with somebody.
Yeah.
Not an actual match.
Yeah, I'll be interested to watch this one. It will likely be one that I actually, because kind of the glory of New Japan, the blessing and curse of New Japan Pro Wrestling when you follow it is that, you know, they are, these events happen in Japanese time. So
those crazy Japanese people wrestle in the middle of the night. I don't know what they're doing.
I mean, it's perfectly adequate timing for them, but for us, it translates to something like 5:30 in the morning. So, but the benefit of it being that I can watch G1 in the morning as it's happening, and then on Friday night I can watch Honor for All, and then Saturday be completely burnt out on all wrestling ever. This seems like a pretty darn stacked card. I'm excited to see. Well, I mean, you know, here's what happens. Nick Aldis versus Flip Gordon. Flip Gordon wins, gets the NWA title, and then all of a sudden, Flip's all in.
Yeah, you think it's going to
happen? Oh, definitely not. But
said the person who didn't think Eli Isom would pin Christopher Daniels.
Well, did you think that Eli Isom would pin Christopher Daniels before you saw it?
Obviously.
Oh, okay. Well, this is true.
Daniels is old and washed up. That's why he's not getting rehired at the end of December.
You were also the person who believed in Dalton Castle retaining the title at Best in the World. And
I look for the good in everyone.
Okay, well, so do you think Flip Gordon's gonna win against Nick Aldis and take that NWA title?
No.
Oh, Harley.
Flip's a flat earther. I said I look for the good in everyone.
Well, you know, even flat earthers, at least they acknowledge that there's an earth. I don't know.
Sure. They acknowledge there's a disc of theirs that we're walking on. So, yeah, next week on this podcast, we'll talk about Honor for All. We'll talk about this weekend's ROH television. No matches announced, but I believe it's going to be the first set of post Best in the World tapings. So we'll start to see a build towards Jay Lethal winning the world title. We'll start to be teased as to, I wonder who's going to win the world title.
Oh, well.
It's going to be an interesting few weeks, I think.
Yeah, with the pay-per-views timing and everything, it's always interesting to see how they make this work. And it's usually more awkward than not. But regardless, you know, it was fun to end our time at the Hammerstein Ballroom tapings with the Scotland match. And just got to say one more time, that is one of the best wrestling venues out there. As far as stateside goes, it's possibly my favorite. It's offered so much in crowd interaction when it comes to these episodes and beyond. It's got a great wrestling legacy. Just thrilled by it. And I hope they return to the Hammerstein soon, because it's just proves to be a really good place for them. Even if the episode's a little lackluster, like maybe last week's episode, it still proves to be a really, really good place to have an ROH show.
Yeah. And what a difference a crowd makes. That's another takeaway from this week's episode for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
So thank you for listening. As always, you can reach us talkinghonor@gmail.com with questions, thoughts, musings, team names for Kenny, Chucky, and Eli, all of that good stuff.
Send me your Eli Isom fan art. Come on, I know some of you can do it. Let's see him in adorable chibi form.
Yeah, with little puppy dog.
Just please, I need to see this. Someone make this happen.
All right. I'm on Twitter @TalkingHonor. Emily's on Twitter
@ PGH, F-O-R-K-E-D, PGH.
Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon.
Bye.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Life!